Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The first vote of the 2016 presidential season is now one for the history books. Today, we're talking about what it means going forward. Texas Senator Ted Cruz took the Republican prize. Billionaire Donald Trump was a somewhat distant second. Hillary Clinton took the Democratic prize, but only very, very narrowly, and along with a few coin tosses, apparently. And Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is teed up for a win in New Hampshire next week. Still, the win, however narrow, was important to the Clinton campaign.
So as I stand here tonight, breathing a big sigh of relief, thank you, Iowa, I will always work to achieve the America that I believe in, where the promise of that dream that we hold out to our children and our grandchildren never fades, but inspires generations to come.
Okay, Hillary Clinton being very, very open about her sigh of relief there. Joining us to talk about the Iowa caucuses from New Hampshire now is Mark Niketa of Bloomberg News. You took a late flight last night to beat the snow, right, Mark?
Yes, a lot of folks made their way out of Iowa as the page turned to New Hampshire and got ahead of the snowstorm to get up and running here today in New Hampshire.
Right, and the snowstorm didn't hit until after the caucuses were finished last night, which was another stroke of luck for anybody who cares about such things. Tell us about the turnout in Iowa last night. What are we looking at? Anything unusual?
It was very high, particularly on the Democratic side. The Bernie Sanders campaign really made a point of mobilizing young people in particular, but disaffected voters go out and caucus in Iowa. And Sanders made it very clear at the during the week that if the turnout was high, he thought he had a good chance to win, and if turnout was bad, he probably wouldn't. And as it worked out, turnout was high, particularly among young people.
Mm-hmm.
A report just was released today showing 11% of young people turned out, which was high for Iowa, and 84% of them backed Bernie Sanders.
Right. So most of them backed Bernie Sanders, probably some of them Martin O'Malley. I mean, Martin O'Malley's now pulled out of the race. He was a distant third anyway. But any sense about where those few votes might have gone?
I'm not sure it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way the Iowa caucuses work, you have to be what they say is viable in your precinct. You have to get 15% of the total number there. And if you're not, then your supporters can go to join another candidate. And, you know, there was support for Martin O'Malley, but probably just not enough to really sway the difference between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Trump did not win as predicted. In fact, he barely held on to second over Florida Senator Marco Rubio. I guess that's more important. What are people telling you about a change of heart in that race?
Well, it was just noteworthy that Donald Trump lost, right? That he, you know, has been talking for this whole cycle now about, you know, how high he's riding in the polls, you know, how well he's doing in the polls. And everybody was kind of wondering, you know, what was going to be the impact on the race and the outcome, you know, when Donald Trump finally lost an election. And he was pretty subdued last night at his election night party. He was pretty, you know, humble and contrite, you know, congratulated Ted Cruz, you know, said he was grateful for the support and all that. But now people are going to be watching to see what kind of impact that outcome in Iowa has in New Hampshire. He has an overwhelming lead in the polls here, but there is some thought or speculation that, you know, the fact that he didn't carry Iowa could affect some New Hampshire voters.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Mark Niketa now. He's a frequent guest on the show during our weekly reporter roundtable, reporter for Bloomberg News. He flew out of Iowa late last night to head to New Hampshire, where he's now and speaking with us from New Hampshire. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Clear success for Marco Rubio, and it's created this now strong three-way race. But Ohio Governor John Kasich has always said he was shooting for third in New Hampshire. So how does this stronger three-way race between Cruz, Trump, and Rubio bode for Governor Kasich's prospects?
It could be a problem, but it remains to be seen. One of the storylines coming out of Iowa is that Marco Rubio did so well and unexpectedly well to almost take second. He came pretty close to beating Trump. So there's some thought that, you know, that might give impetus to folks in the so-called establishment lane to get behind him,
mm-hmm.
you know, particularly these Republicans who do not want to see Ted Cruz or Donald Trump as their party nominee. Of course, Governor Kasich is counting on that same vote, that sort of establishment lane vote coming out of New Hampshire. So he'll have to fight, you know, not only to try and capture the share of that vote he was already trying to get among himself, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, and Marco Rubio, but I'll also sort of beat back sort of the temptation or the urge, if that exists in this primary, to get behind Marco Rubio as sort of the best chance to carry the banner against Donald Trump or Ted Cruz.
Do we know, do we have any sense about whether this was a falling away from Trump, a falling to Ted Cruz, or toward Marco Rubio? Where was the where was the fluidity in all this?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's probably some more analysis needed there. I mean, the last poll in Iowa, which is kind of the gold standard of polls there, it's been very accurate in the past, had Trump up by 5 points. And there was some, uncertainty about the poll, but some question about, how accurately it captured the support for Trump among the Iowa evangelicals, predominant amount of the voters in Iowa consider themselves evangelical, at least those who participate in the Republican caucus. And it was pretty clear they were overwhelmingly behind Cruz and supported him. And the question was, would these evangelical voters get behind Trump, or was the poll actively accurately reflecting that support? So I think once the final analysis is in and the numbers are all crunched, I think we'll see that a lot of those evangelical voters stayed with Cruz and didn't go to Trump.
And there were supposed to be a pretty sturdy number of people that aren't usual caucus participants for Trump, that they were coming out for the first time. Now, there's one thing, as you mentioned, 11% of the young people voted in the Democratic caucus. That makes more sense. But bringing out new voters that maybe were older but never have caucused before for Trump, maybe they didn't show up?
Yeah, and that'll be another thing that'll be interesting, if it comes out in the analysis after the fact here, because that was always a question, going into the actual voting this cycle is, folks might say they support Donald Trump in a poll, but how motivated would they be, particularly, like you say, those sort of, non-participants or irritant participants, how motivated would they be to actually show up and vote? And the first test out of Iowa suggests that maybe, the strength you're seeing for Donald Trump in all these polls across the country might not be, reflective of his electoral strength.
What did Iowans think of him? What's your sense about what they were thinking about the whole Trump factor?
Well, it's consistent with what you hear in other places when you ask folks why they're backing Trump. They like the idea that, he's this billionaire businessman who's not bought and sold by campaign contributions, and he can shake up the status quo. And it's interesting how there's sort of this parallel between what's happening on the Republican side and the Democratic side with, the idea that, the politics we have today are not working for particularly, middle-class workers and folks who, have seen their wages stagnate while, the wealthy get more wealthy. That was a clear theme of what was going on in the Democratic primary. And it's why a lot of people say they like Trump. They say, well, the politics we have, electing the same old kind of establishment politicians hasn't worked for us. It isn't getting the country in the direction we want. Let's give Trump a try. So you heard that in Iowa, too, and you saw sort of the same kind of enthusiasm at his rallies. He gets big rallies. But again, the question was always, how does that translate into votes? Because there is sort of also a curiosity factor there. You talk to some folks and they go to the Trump rally because it's entertainment. Like, you're watching his reality show, or you would just, you see him in the news and you want to see him in person.
Did you go to any of the caucuses?
I went to a caucus on the Iowa State University campus. I was curious to see how, this question of would young people turn out to support Sanders, and they did turn out. It was overflow crowds coming into the, there were five precincts that caucused at the Memorial Union at the university where I was, and there were so many students who showed up, they ran out of registration slips. In Iowa, you can register the same day at the polling place, and in Iowa, a student could register on campus where they live or back home where they have an address as well. And there were so many students there that they couldn't accommodate them all, and they were overflowing into the room and sitting on the floor, and it really did sort of give you an indication that this was going to be a big turnout election, and Sanders was going to do better or run pretty close, if not beat Hillary Clinton.
I was listening to David Green on the Morning Edition this morning, and he was almost giddy. He was excited by the participation. It was such a new experience, he said, to see so many young people showing up at the polls, or caucuses in this case.
Yeah, and you know, you could tell they were enthused. And it wasn't just, you know, Sanders supporters. There were clearly Clinton folks in that crowd as well, and plenty of Republicans, too. This union where I was at had two precincts for Republicans, and the lines were out the door and down the stairs for the Republicans as well among the students.
And describe the scene when the Democrats do their voting. They actually vote with their body, right?
Yeah, they sort of they determine this viability standard first. You know, do the candidates have enough to you know, participate? Mm-hmm. And then you go to a corner of the room where there's a, you know, a sign for the candidate, and that's how you sort of determine your vote. It's a little different on the Republican side where they actually have a ballot, or in some cases, but in the Democrats, you actually have to walk over and sort of physically cast your vote.
And I think four or five precincts, maybe more, they actually determine the outcome of the Clinton-Sanders race by a flip of the coin.
Yeah, and it was exactly, and it was extremely close, too. There's still one precinct outstanding, and, you know, as the vote was coming in, I was at the Sanders election night party, and, you know, you could see the results coming in, and Sanders just kept getting closer and closer to Clinton as the night went on. And, you know, you wondered, you know, how these last few precincts were going to, if they were going to sway the race. And, you know, obviously they were very close if they came down to a coin flip. And, you know, the question was asked to Senator Sanders on the way back to New Hampshire last night, whether he was going to try and contest the vote or, you know, otherwise, you know, question it. And he said no, that, you know, he wants to make sure everything was done properly and so forth. But at this point, they're not looking to challenge the outcome.
And do those kinds of narrow races, when it comes to a coin toss, does that, I mean, any violence out there?
No,
they don't care that much.
No, it's sort of the, you know, the Iowa way, right? I mean, these caucuses have been going on for many years, and they're used to this tradition. And, you know, when it comes down to a tie, that's how they decide it.
A lot of people question the Iowa caucus and its stature nationally by being the first, but also the nature of the caucus. Do they examine their system out there at all at times like this and wonder if it should change?
Not in Iowa. They're very proud of this tradition they have of being the first, you know, voting in the nation. And they take it seriously. You know, the idea that, you know, as a one state sort of examining all the candidates, they have a responsibility to sort of vet them and, you know, be sort of the first winnowing down process of the election cycle. But, you know, the questions of the caucus have always been, you know, on both the Democratic and the Republican side, it tends to attract, you know, sort of the most partisan voters in both cases. And it's a pretty small sample. You know, there was, I think, 170,000 Republicans, you know, who voted, for example, in all the caucuses across the state, which is, you know, a sliver of the population and, you know, certainly not entirely representative of the United States. But, you know, somebody has to go first, and then they're very proud of, you know, this tradition they have of, you know, considering the candidates and, you know, having the first say.
And you're in New Hampshire now. Are you going to be following Ohio Governor John Kasich?
Yes, it'll be the pages turn now to New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Governor Kasich has made no secret. This is his, you know, Waterloo. This is where he's going to take his stand. And, you know, the goal is to, as he says a lot, be the story coming out of New Hampshire that, you know, come a week from now, to the night of the primary, you know, you're going to see him second or, you know, possibly third, but, you know, certainly ahead of these other establishment candidates. And, you know, that would give him the boost he's looking for and would need to, you know, to continue getting fundraising going and momentum heading into South Carolina and other primaries as the, you know, the schedule expands.
Well, I know he's going to be extremely busy over the next week, which means you are too. So thanks for scraping some time together for us today. Appreciate it.
No problem. Good to talk to you.
It's Mark Niket. He's a reporter for Bloomberg News. He just left Iowa last night. Now he's in New Hampshire getting ready for the primary there next week. Coming up, more conversation about the Iowa caucuses and what they mean going forward. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about last night's Iowa caucus. We just heard from Mark Niket of Bloomberg News, who is now in New Hampshire. In Iowa last night, Republicans chose a clear caucus winner in Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
We will continue to campaign the same way, sitting down person to person, leader to leader, VFW hall to Dunkin' Donuts, returning to the great state of New Hampshire.
Like Senator Cruz, we're looking ahead today as well. Joining us now is Ohio State University law and history professor David Stebbin. Welcome back.
Nice to be back.
And on by phone, Dave Cohen of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. Welcome back, Dave.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, Dave, how telling is a process like the Iowa caucus? It's different than any other state, right?
Yes. It is unique because it uses, obviously, a caucus-style method to allocate delegates, and it's also first. That's the only reason that we pay attention, really, to Iowa is because it is first, and it really is an arcane system that they use there. The delegates that were selected last night, they still have to go through several more elections to determine who are going to be the delegates at the national convention. It's really a glorified beauty contest, what happened last night. But we pay attention to it simply because it is first in the nation. I mean, Iowa is about as unrepresentative a state as you could probably find in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the country would be much better served to have a state like Ohio or a similar, more representative state going first. But that's the only reason we pay attention to Iowa, is because it's number one. And, you know, the media needs to focus on something to kind of kick off the election season.
And David Stebbin, we heard from Mark Niket earlier, said Iowans love it. They have no intentions of changing. Is it really that Iowans love it or that the powers that be love it?
Well, it's a small state process because relatively few people participate in the caucuses.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an opportunity early on for candidates to interact in a very real way with ordinary voters. If Ohio were first, which would make me happy in many ways as an Ohioan, it's such a big state with major metro areas, you couldn't do the same kind of campaigning. And so I think for the parties, one of the things that Iowa serves, one function it serves, is to see, can this person relate well to ordinary middle Americans, not through a media filter, but directly in small groups? And if you're not likable, you're not a viable major party presidential candidate. And this is one way of determining that. And so I'm mixed about Iowa. And by the way, they've had the caucuses in Iowa for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They only became what they are today in 1976 because Jimmy Carter did unexpectedly well there and then went on to win the Democratic nomination. And so Iowa acquired this status. Well, sometimes it gives you a sense really early on that a long shot candidate might be the nominee. But they're not a great predictor on either side of who the eventual nominee is.
But I get your point. It is when particularly Iowa and New Hampshire gives the rest of us an opportunity to see the candidates sort of up close and
Correct.
Personal. Too, if every event was a, you know, an Ohio Stadium event, like it often is in Columbus when things get down to the quick, it brings out a completely different conversation. What about the importance of retail politics, Dave Cohen? Ted Cruz went to every county in Iowa, and that was reflected, as far as I'm concerned, in the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, retail politics is obviously very important. But, you know, retail politics absolutely happens here in Ohio when we get to the general election phase. It's not going to be, you know, that much, you know, further in the calendar when candidates are coming here and they're holding, yes, some large events and stadiums, but also a lot of smaller events all around the state of Ohio engaging in retail politics. The problem with Iowa is the fact that the caucus method is so time-consuming that turnout is usually very, very low compared to that of a primary election. Even though you had record turnout in Iowa, it's still smaller than what you would have with a primary election when somebody can go in, cast their ballot in secret, and then leave in 15 minutes. You know, there are a lot of busy people in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
And they have kids, and, you know, they got to run to soccer practice. Well, not in the winter, but, you know, maybe basketball practice, you know, et cetera. They won't be able to participate. And so only the most diehard voters come out for the Iowa primaries. or the Iowa caucuses, and you have a very different electorate, and these are people that tend to inhabit the ends of the political spectrum. And so caucuses tend to drive ideological turnout, and that's a real problem, I think, in our political process, because they're going to gravitate towards candidates who tend to be more ideological. And also, Iowa, again, is not representative of the country. It is, mm-hmm. it is
to begin with.
Yeah, it's like the third or fourth whitest state in the country. If you look at the breakdown of voters in the entrance polls, I mean, you know, there's not a black person to be found in there.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a good barometer, I think, of a candidate's appeal to the nation as a whole.
Right, and I think that's correct. One other function, though, that's served by the caucuses is precisely because they attract party activists. You have to have party activists in order to wage a national campaign. So it's also an indicator of that. Do you have appeal to those kinds of folks? It is a problem because they tend to be wing people.
Mm-hmm.
So the ideal achievement in Iowa is to be a kind of a centrist candidate who actually prevails, who does well there, because that suggests that you can appeal to the party activists in sufficient numbers to help you win a general election, but also that you have the sort of middle of the road appeal that will help you in the swing states in the fall. So in a way, a good night for Hillary Clinton that way, because she's viewed as a more centrist conventional candidate. And an interesting night for the Clintons. They are a team.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the third try for them. In other words, Bill Clinton lost badly in Iowa in 92. She lost in Iowa in 2008. And so finally a winner, not by much. The Clintons have struggled in Iowa every time. And I use the plural. I understand that she's a different candidate from him, but they are very much a political partnership. And on election night, it's the same people, right? There's Bill
on the
and there's
stage,
Hillary.
Right.
And so they quietly within the Clinton camp, a feeling that they have finally done it and that it will help them, in part because Bernie Sanders is from Vermont, which is next door to New Hampshire. It's basically one media market. Everyone in New Hampshire knows who Senator Sanders is. He's like the Paul Tsongas type character. He's going to win there most likely. But the fact that she did well enough in Iowa to blunt his appeal helps her a lot.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses. The results are in. Ted Cruz wins by 4 percentage points, at least, over Donald Trump, who just barely eked out a second place slot over Marco Rubio, senator from Florida. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. You can also go to Twitter and talk to us by way of WOSU All Sides. With me in the studio, David Stebbin. He's a law and history professor at OSU. And by phone, Dave Cohen of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. What about that dynamic, Dave Cohen, which is unique, I think, where when you're at these caucuses and, you know, things are getting tight, people start trying to talk you out of your vote. And just the whole physicality of the Democratic caucus there, where you're actually standing in with one group of people and people are coming over and talking to you to get you to come over to another group. It's like picking you for a kickball or something.
Yeah, it's an absolutely unique process that's used in Iowa. I mean, you know, one of the great things about Iowa is it's a fascinating process to watch as a political observer. Anybody interested in politics would love the Iowa caucus. But again, the problem is, because it is such a public process and a time-consuming process, it's going to attract really only the most people, the people that are most active in politics. And so, you know, to me, the important story is the people that stay at home and stay home because of this process that don't get captured by the Iowa caucus system.
Do we know much about them?
We can assume that they're not as engaged in the political process, but these are going to be voters that are going to be very important, you know, come the general election, because, you know, general elections are won in the middle, in general. It's usually the independent swing voters, the ones that haven't quite made up their mind yet, that the two parties are competing for, because, you know, of course you have to get your base out, But beyond getting your base out, you have to fight for those voters that haven't made up their mind yet, that are in the middle of the political spectrum, and that, you know, varies in elections between, you know, 10 and 25% of the electorate, depending upon the actual election and what's happening in that year. So those are the people that really are consequential once we get past the convention.
There is the question of whether Donald Trump will now be branded a loser because he made such a big deal out of being a winner. David Stebbin, any sense about the Donald Trump story at this point?
Well, he was never going to be a natural for Iowa Republicans. Even that last poll done by the Des Moines Register, it was suspect from the moment it was published because it had, I think, in the sample on the Republican side, 47% of their projected caucus goers were evangelicals, whereas it's more like 60%. That was true last time. It was true this time. In other words, the sample they used undercounted.
They had a short sample on evangelicals. Gotcha.
Right.
Yeah.
And evangelicals dominate the Republican caucus process in Iowa. One of the fascinating things about Iowa is on the Republican side, it behaves more like a Sunbelt state in terms of who participates.
Uh-huh.
In part because of what Dave Cohen has already said, the numbers are really small,
right.
The most intensely committed turnout, and they are disproportionately evangelicals. So the Cruz victory is not a surprise to hard-headed pollsters who look at that evangelical number. And so it bodes well for Cruz in the Sun Belt, but there aren't too many other Frost Belt states that behave like Iowa. Right. But given how dominant the Sun Belt has become in the Republican Party, that may not matter. For example, Cruz is leading easily in South Carolina. And the way this dynamic has worked in the recent election cycles on the Republican side is, yes, somebody wins in Iowa and somebody wins in New Hampshire, and then they go down to South Carolina, and generally the winner in South Carolina gets to be the nominee. So at the moment, it looks better for Ted Cruz.
Can I jump in?
Sure, Dave Cohen.
Yeah, actually, Trump is quite ahead in the polling for South Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. I can look at it right now. Cruz is definitely doing better with evangelicals, but right now Trump is leading in both New Hampshire and in South Carolina, which was one of the big narratives last night. If Trump could have won the Iowa caucus, it would have given him a lot of momentum going into both New Hampshire and South Carolina. And if he wins those, the big three, it'd be very, very difficult to stop him.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he's well known in New Hampshire, and the electorate mm-hmm. there is very different. There aren't a lot of evangelical Christians on the Republican side. And so New Hampshire looks mm-hmm. good for him. Whether South Carolina does is that those polls, it's a little unclear how reliable they are. Right. In other words, Donald Trump was the leader in the polls in Iowa for most of the time, and then it didn't work. So I'm dubious about in the Sun Belt for Donald Trump. In other words, one of the problems is he's not a morally traditional person. He's mm-hmm. been married three times. He's from New York, which is not viewed, New York City, as sort of a morally traditional place. So in the parts of the country where Republican primary and caucus goers are primarily churchy people, he is a tough sell. Whereas in New Hampshire, it's different. Many more sort of moderately religious people and secular folks on the Republican side, more business-oriented. That's a good state for him, I think.
And then there's this three-way issue. He only narrowly beat out Rubio. That was probably a bigger surprise than any to a lot of people. So it's a three-way. What significance, if any, out of that, Dave Cohen, in New Hampshire?
Well, first of all, Rubio proved that he is going to be a pretty formidable candidate, going forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's been besides the race at the top between Cruz and Trump, there's been another race that's been going on that is between really the establishment party candidates, made up of, Rubio, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, and Chris Christie. And the question is, which of those four are going to emerge as the person that really the establishment part of the party is going to get behind? And really, the money is really on Marco Rubio right now. He's got the momentum coming out of Iowa.
Right.
He's going to get an infusion of cash. And probably more importantly, he's going to be a storyline, and he's going to be getting a lot of free media, which is going to translate to even more cash and even more attention. And that's going to be important for him moving forward. And so the question, the real challenge is for, you know, the Bushes and the Christies and the Kasichs, are they going to be able to hang on past New Hampshire? My guess is at least a couple of them are going to drop out if they don't perform well. And, you know, you got four people vying for really that establishment lane. There's just not enough room for all four.
Right, an establishment lane that we didn't know was going to be taken up in the way it has been by Marco Rubio.
Right, and he's in some ways more appealing. There is a kind of populist backstory to him. He's not a country club Republican by birth. His parents were very, very ordinary folks in terms of what they did for a living. And so he has a more populist appeal, as well as being a kind of more conventional mainstream candidate. I think the thing to look for on the Republican side out of New Hampshire is it the same three in the top, at the top on the Republican side? If it is, then I think the rest of those folks are going to disappear pretty quickly. And then we'll have this interesting three-way contest because they all appeal to different segments, Cruz, Rubio, and Trump. So those three could last quite a while, and that would be interesting.
So we still have Fiorina, Huckabee, Rand Paul, for that matter, who...
Huckabee has dropped out.
That's right.
As of this morning.
Ben Carson's still there. That's the first time I've uttered his name all day.
He finished fourth.
Yep.
Also popular with evangelical Christians.
But pretty far back fourth from Rubio.
That's right. He has faded. I think for him, the national security commander-in-chief part of the job, the worse the outside world looks, the harder it is to imagine someone with no experience in that realm.
Well, then how do you account for Trump?
Right. Well, Donald Trump is
he makes up for his lack of experience with bluster?
Well, I don't know that his core constituency processes that quite that way, but it may be that. In other words, he's a macho strongman, and even Vladimir Putin says he's impressed by that quality in him. So his substantive knowledge of national security affairs is pretty limited. Although he's from New York, he's done business around the world.
True.
But I think the really interesting thing to watch as the election goes on across the year is, does the outside world calm down some, or does it stay where it is, or does it get even more dangerous? The more troubled the outside world is, the more unviable, completely inexperienced people are in that area, are as general election candidates. You just can't imagine them having to make these decisions on day one. And on the Republican side in particular, they're kind of chastened because they tried this in 2000 with Governor Bush, who did know a lot in some areas of domestic policy, but even he admitted he was very inexperienced in national security. And that didn't work out so well for the George W. Bush administration. So they don't want to do that again. Most of the candidates, virtually all the candidates they have, are relatively inexperienced in that area. So that's a real problem for them.
We're going to continue our conversation with Dave Cohen of the Racey Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron by phone. And with me here on the studio, David Stebbin. He's a law and history professor at OSU. Questions or comments about the Iowa caucuses going forward to the New Hampshire primary next week? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the results of last night's Iowa caucuses and looking forward to New Hampshire. Billionaire Donald Trump was the front runner before yesterday, but had to settle for a relatively distant second and only narrowly beat out third place Marco Rubio. What came out of all of that was the surprise of Trump's humble and gracious reaction to the results.
We finished second, and I want to tell you something. I'm just honored. I'm really honored. We will go on to get the Republican nomination, and we will go on to easily beat Hillary or Bernie or whoever the hell they throw up there.
I want to just jump right in with an email from Brad, who writes, with the results of the Iowa caucuses, I am reminded of that Ricky Bobby quote, if you're not first, you're last. I think that was absolutely Trump's motto from the start, and the second place finish should sort of damage his whole reason for being up on the stage. How does he recover if he doesn't start winning primaries outright? The astounding thing about his approach is that his only argument for running is that he will make the best president because his polls are so high. Dave Cohen, thoughts about that? And first of all, reaction to Trump's humility.
Well, I think most observers were looking for a Howard Dean type meltdown.
Yeah.
in Trump's speech, and were surprised that he didn't have one of those. You know, I think one thing that is real evident is over the course of the last, you know, 6+ months, is that Donald Trump has become a much better political candidate, I think, than most people would have thought he could become.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, really over the last couple of months, he has kind of morphed into an actual real candidate as opposed to a caricature. As far as Trump's momentum and winning, you know, clearly it was a setback losing Iowa by more than most of the polls had predicted. But he is going to win New Hampshire. And then if he wins New Hampshire by a pretty healthy margin, all of a sudden, you know, he becomes the story again. And so I think, you know, the real, you know, tale of the primary system is that, you know, it's just a series of steps, and, you know, with each step, whoever wins, you know, changes the course of the race. And so, you know, right now, Iowa, Cruz and Rubio are certainly the story, you know, but once mm-hmm. we get to New Hampshire, Trump will win, and that'll change the story.
David Stubbin?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in New Hampshire, because independents there can vote in either party.
But not both.
Correct. And there are active, intense races on both sides, so it's not clear where independents will go. John Kasich, for example, does best with independent voters in New Hampshire. So if the Democratic race were a foregone conclusion and uninteresting, if the past is any guide, independents would flock into the Republican primary, and that would help him. But it's close on the Democratic side, and so it could be that independents split down the middle, half go vote in the Democratic primary and half go vote in the Republican primary.
And dilute the impact.
Correct. And so to me, the most interesting thing about New Hampshire will be, do we get the same three top vote getters in New Hampshire as in Iowa? In which case, Iowa and New Hampshire, the most important thing they will have done on the Republican side is winnow the field down to those three, because I think most of the others will be out. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton is in the envious position of being expected to lose badly, which is not a bad place to be if you've done okay in Iowa, right? In other words, she may lose badly, but people will say Sanders is from next door, everybody knows him, it doesn't really matter. And then we're on to states where there's a large minority presence in terms of voting on the Democratic side, and she does really well with Black and Latino voters. And so Bernie land, you know, this very white electorate in Iowa and New Hampshire, that's like Vermont. That's like where he's from. He so far has not demonstrated, he may, but so far has not demonstrated an ability to win lots of support from Blacks and Latinos. And given what the Democratic Party is like in terms of primary voters now, that bodes well for her. So, but we'll see. I'm leery even of predicting that Donald Trump will win in New Hampshire, because I have no, his candidacy is built to a large degree on very high name recognition, his celebrity status, people know who he is, and now that his aura of invincibility, if you want to call it that, has been punctured, it depends on how he conducts himself going forward. I was very impressed by how gracious he was. I wasn't expecting a Howard Dean ranting meltdown. I was just expecting rudeness, you know, an ungracious loser. So, well, I'm tired of Iowa and Iowa. He didn't do that. So that's good for Donald Trump. So if he can rebound from the setback that he had in Iowa and campaign in an effective way in New Hampshire, he should mm-hmm. do pretty well. He's good on TV, and he has loads of money. And in today's presidential sweepstakes, if you're good on TV and you have loads of money, that takes you a long way.
Life is good.
Can I?
Sure. Yeah.
Can I just jump in on the Democratic side for Iowa? You know, Hillary Clinton did win, just barely. But last night was not a good night for her. You know, if you would have asked any pundit 6 months ago whether an unknown senator who identifies as a socialist, you know, would virtually tie her in the Iowa Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton in the Iowa caucus 6 months later, all the pundits would have said, you're absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. There's no way. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, based on her name recognition, based on her establishment support, based on her money, should have absolutely dominated the Iowa caucuses, you know, especially based on the fact that she had very little competition. She had Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley, who could not get any traction. She should have completely dominated. She didn't. Now, if she would have lost, it would have been absolutely devastating for her campaign. That being said, the fact that she, you know, tied Bernie Sanders means that Bernie Sanders has a tremendous amount of momentum going into New Hampshire, which he will win. But also, people are going to give him a fresh look on the Democratic side. People are going to start donating to his campaign that might not have thought about it. And he's going to get an awful lot of free media, you know, from this very narrow loss. I mean, look what happened with Rick Santorum on the Republican side in 2012. Nobody had ever heard of Rick Santorum, and he pretty much tied Mitt Romney. And Santorum lasted for a few months and really shouldn't have.
Let me ask you about the idea that what if she does, he's going to win in New Hampshire. Bernie Sanders mm-hmm. is going to win in New Hampshire. What if she does a lot better than expected in New Hampshire? She doesn't win, but she comes mm-hmm. a lot closer. Is that, I mean, is that kind of where she's at right now, what she has to do?
Absolutely, because, you know, I think David's right. The expectations are really, really low for
right.
Hillary. So if she exceeds those expectations, then she will be the big story. You know, she'll be calling herself the comeback gal, just like Bill Clinton called himself the comeback kid back in 1992. He finished second to Paul Tsongas when few people thought he would do that well. Well, you know, if she exceeds expectations, we're going to have all sorts of, you know, comeback stories. And then she has a chance to really run the table because those next primaries, you know, South Carolina and others, really favor her. And let's not forget, one thing we haven't talked about is in the Democratic Party, a number of delegates are superdelegates, you know, which are essentially establishment Democratic Party office holders. And overwhelmingly, she has those people locked up.
Right. And I think that's all very sound. The one slight difference I would have with Dave about Hillary Clinton's performance in Iowa is that, as he mentioned earlier, the electorate out there, the caucus-going electorate on the Democratic side, they're very liberal people. They're wing people. And the Clintons from the beginning have defined themselves as centrist
right.
Democrats. So the fact that she was even able to marginally prevail in an electorate that's so tilted that way is really within the party, among the people who run the Democratic Party, a significant thing.
You know, I just as far as the way that she came across in her remarks last night afterward, we mentioned Trump sounded very gracious and humble. She sounded very animated and genuinely happy and excited about something for a change.
The Clintons are used to getting up on a stage on caucus night and conceding in Iowa. And so she has outperformed Bill and her own self earlier. And so it's not by much. It's the smallest possible margin. But psychologically, it's a boost for the Clinton campaign and for her. Even if the media doesn't play it that way, within the party and within her campaign, that's the way they feel.
Well, but what from what I've been reading is that the inner circle of the Clinton campaign, including Hillary and Bill, you know, they're not happy with the results, and they've been kind of shaken by how poorly she did in Iowa. They really did expect to win and win by a larger margin. Obviously, as we got closer to the Iowa caucus, they didn't expect that.
Right.
And, you know, there's even talk about, you know, a campaign shakeup at this point, or maybe adding, you know, more campaign staffers so that, you know, they can reorganize going forward.
Well, we know that Bill Clinton in recent weeks has been getting more involved in the day-to-day operations of the campaign. So
that's a pretty good political consultant right there.
Yeah, well, exactly. One of the best.
And he's also good at campaigning in New Hampshire. So they may use him there. I mean, it's a complicated relationship. You know, he's a complicated figure in the minds of the electorate.
He's more valuable in 2016, though, than he was in 2008.
Correct. Memories of what they don't like to some degree have faded about him. And he's older and he's a somewhat different person in some ways now. But she also doesn't want to be eclipsed by him. They are very different kinds of campaigners. He is more inclined to inspiration and improvisation. She reminds me of Woody Hayes, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. She's very methodical, disciplined. That's how she got elected to the U.S. Senate, and that's how she has narrowly prevailed in Iowa. In other words, as it got tight, as Dave Cohen mentions, that big lead melted away. There was a big debate in the Clinton campaign about whether or not she should try to do something bold.
Hmm.
And in the end, she decided no. And she didn't. And she's marginally a success as a result. She's very risk averse. So she's very Midwestern that way, actually. And she's a native Midwesterner.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just see whether that is a sound strategy against Senator Sanders, who is a different kind of candidate. It's, I think, extremely telling to me that older voters like her a lot more than Senator Sanders. They're both old, Senator and Clinton, but they're senior citizens by definition. But older voters tend to be more cautious in a lot of ways, and they tend to be for her.
Well, and don't older voters also, Dave Cohen, look at the resume a little bit more closely? She's got a resume.
Yes. I think they're less open to being inspired, and they look more, like you said, at the resume and what would this person do when they're governing. One of Hillary's big problems, and it's always been a big problem, is she's not a good campaigner. She's been doing this for a long time. She's not very good at it. What she is good at is governing. But in order to govern, you have to be a good campaigner.
Mm-hmm.
And Sanders has been able to tap into something that is inspiring a lot of people on the Democratic side and exciting them. Not to the extent, I don't think, that Barack Obama did in 2008, but it kind of approaches that. It's a very interesting dynamic because David's absolutely right. And there's a huge divide. The younger people, those 40 and younger, are overwhelmingly tipping towards Sanders. Those 40 and over are overwhelmingly going towards Hillary Clinton.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, we have an email from Kim in Upper Arlington. I wanted to get to that before we run out of time. She writes, Trump's results reflect his missteps in skipping the debate and not pressing flesh in Iowa. Also, the eventual Rubio-Cruz fistfight is going to be an evangelical bloodbath. Two different topics. But what about skipping the debate? David Stebbin, any thoughts about that?
Well, I think that's less significant than the fact that he didn't do a lot of retail politicking. Now, there's a security problem with a billionaire celebrity.
He did big events.
Correct. And Hillary Clinton, to some degree, had the same problem. And so there's a security issue. But I think the thing I wondered about all along with Donald Trump in Iowa is much of his audience people attracted by a celebrity of the sort who doesn't usually come to a place like Iowa. So it is interesting to go see this person, even if you're not going to ultimately vote for them. So I don't know that he could have done things very differently. I think 60% of all Republican caucus goers approximately in Iowa are evangelical Christians. And that is just not a natural constituency for him.
Hmm.
So, and he could try. He could be respectful of them, but it's a really difficult thing for him.
And last word, Dave Cohen.
Yes. There's no question that Donald Trump's challenge going forward is going to be with those more conservative evangelical voters. I mean, if you look at the entrance polls, Ted Cruz, got a high plurality of the people that consider themselves very conservative, whereas Donald Trump, carried the moderates. And Rubio carried the somewhat conservatives. So you can kind of see it breaking down there, that they're kind of appealing to different parts of the Republican ideological spectrum.
Lots more to talk about going forward. Next week, a new conversation about a new primary or the first primary, official primary versus caucus, has occurred in Iowa last night. I want to thank you, Dave Cohen, for joining us today. Appreciate it always.
Thanks very much, Ann.
David Cohen, he is the Racy Bliss Institute of Applied. He's from the Racy Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. And David Stebbin, thanks to you as well.
A pleasure to be here, Ann.
David Stebbin, law and history professor at Ohio State University. Thanks for the emails today, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.